I would like to discuss about how to design functional proteins. I think this is related to a previous talk. And once you have a stable protein structure, then of course you would like to introduce a function onto the structures. The question we would like to ask, the first question is that we observe that some protein with the same fold have different functions. I will have one example that Alex showed us, the albumin and the lysosome example. And other proteins with different fold have the same or similar functions. So we have two different questions. And from these two different observations, we can ask, can we separate the protein structure from function? Do those structure and function evolve independently? How nature gets the structures and how nature gets the function, are they related or are they involved independently? This is the example of Alex talked about alpha-lactalbumin and also lysozyme. The structure are extremely similar. If you superimpose, they're superimpose, I don't remember, like less than two estrons. But one is the enzyme, and the other one is just some protein in milk. Actually, some group, including one group in Nanjing University, collaborated with my group, they tried to just transfer the active site of lysozyme onto albumin, and they made some active proteins. I didn't plot out the active site. Actually, the active site on lysozyme is around here in one cleft of on the surface. There's a surface cleft on lysozyme, and if you only transfer the three key residues and then you modify the binding pockets, because in alpha-lactalbumin, not only the active site are absent, and also the binding site is occupied by phenylalanine. So if you mutate the binding site to make it larger, and also you transfer active site, then you can make active enzyme out of albumin. But of course, still the activity is much lower than lysozyme. But you could be successful to make it more active if you mutate more residues. The other example is the EPO. This is the complex structure of EPO and its receptor. This blue one is EPO. It's kind of hormone will stimulate the growth of red cell. This structure is mainly four helix bundle. This four helix bundle protein will bind to two receptors. And this one, this in the middle, this structure is very different from four helix bundle. It's a dimer of one beta helping. And this was selected from in vitro peptide library. And this small peptide will bind to the same EPO receptor and show the same activity, but with very different structures. So this shows that different protein structures can have the same function. And also, because this peptide come from in vitro peptide library selection, I mean, if you can simulate nature evolution by peptide selection, maybe we can see that this means that in nature also have independent evolution route to the same function, but you can get different structures with the same function. So if nature can have different protein structures with the same function, we can do this. I mean, we can do this in the lab, and in order to make proteins with different structures but with the same function, we need to study the protein-protein interface. And our approach is that we try to just move the active site of, like this is one example of Barstow and Barnes, this well-studied system. We try to move the active site of this protein onto another skeleton, or a different skeleton. Before we go on, of course, we should ask why we can do this. And this is from the previous example, we can generalize that the protein functions are mainly determined by local surface ranges. The hydrophobic core may only provide a structural skeleton. And in PDB, we know in PDB we can use 14, it's more than 14,000 protein skeletons can be used as a scaffold for grafting active sites. And also, we already see examples that proteins with the same structure, sometimes with very different functions. This means that if we use the natural scaffold with the original function might be an enzyme, then you can introduce other functional groups to make it bind to another receptors. And the other question we need to ask, especially for funding agencies, we know it should be okay, we can do this, but why this is useful and why this is important? We can argue that natural protein with the right function sometimes is not stable and might be antigenic, or sometimes it's with very high molecular weight, or it's experimentally very difficult to fold. And also, sometimes they would like to design multifunctional proteins. Of course, I think for scientific studies, we would like to understand the structure and the function of the relationships of proteins. Oh, of course, not all the need. I mean, sometimes like. The proteins that be used in biotech, some biotech products, drug companies. Yeah, some of the biotech, the drugs, it's not like if sometimes you get inclusion bodies, it's not easy to fold, and a lot of people get allergy or something like that. So of course, you would like to make another small protein with the desirable properties, but with the same function. For the functional transfer, there are already some studies, but the study is limited to transfer small ligand binding sites, mostly metal ions. Some of the experiments are successful in introducing the metal binding site with the KD, quite successful with the KD less than 1 micromole. And also, there are some examples, experimental examples of transfer functional residues between homologous proteins, like for serine protease, you can modify the binding pockets to make it to alter the substrate specificity. And I think also there are also some examples of just transfer one loop. It's quite straightforward. If you have a calcium binding loop, you just transfer the single loop onto another protein, and that loop will still function. Our purpose is not, we are not going to transfer active site between homologous protein, but we would like to transfer the active site to a protein with very different scaffold. Before going on, we need to study what's the characteristics of protein-protein interface. There are a lot of characteristics, but most of the necessary things we need to know is that there are large barrier surface between protein and protein interface. And also usually this interface include 10 to 30 residues on each side. But I think the most important thing is that although they include 10 to 30 residues, only 3 to 4 key residues contribute the most to the interaction.
Is that
experimentally known? Yes, some experiment data, some people, I think there are already some mutation data. But it also, you can analyze the energy contribution from each residue. Actually, there's one paper from Journal of Molecular Biology. And also, I think I also have a finger from our own work. We can do analysis on the protein-protein interface. Like you can use different colors to denote like where is the hydrogen bond donors and acceptors, and also where is the hydrophobic site. And if you plot out, you know where is the hot spot. And the hot spot, like three to four key radius, will contribute like up to 80% of the total energy.
I just wondering, because like, I think for instance, the NOT and other things like that, which tend to try to maximize the geometric packing,
mm-hmm.
that seems to be sort of the exact opposite picture. That's what it's saying is the overall shape and complexity of the whole binding area that's distributed over that area.
Right, of course. I mean, the total. Yeah, but for protein-protein interface, because it's quite large, it usually it's very flat and it's quite large, you would like to know where it contributes most, especially for if you like to transfer functional group. You don't want to transfer all the 10 radials or 30 radials all to another protein. In that case, it will be difficult. If you know where the key sites, you can only move, I mean, you only need to move like 4 or 3 radials to make it more smaller. And also, of course, you can continue on. If you know where is the hot spot, you can even go from small protein, even you can continue on to small molecules. So as our purpose is to find another protein scaffold that will bind to the same site. So the requirement, we have two requirements. First, of course, it's you need to have the complementary surface with the receptor. And also, you need to have the available positions for transferring key interaction residues. This cartoon I used before. So the first requirement is that in this protein should provide a suitable surface that will bind to this, if we call this receptor, then this protein will have a complementary interface. And also, if this is the active site, should have already have like 3 positions, you can transfer like aspartic acid onto this site or other site. You need to have already like the side chain, the orientation of the carbon beta should be already the same position, then you can transfer. So for that requirement, for the active site, the transfer actually is quite straightforward. You can just use a vector algorithm. Like the original, in our original ligand protein, if we only have 3 key radials, we have 3 vectors of carbon alpha and carbon beta. And you can just, we just search the protein database. And of course, you before you search, you need to make a subset. Like you would like to make proteins less than 100 radials, then you make a subset. If we would like to get protein like around 200 radials, you make another set. You just search the protein database for these 3 vectors. Once you get the 3 vectors correct, then you get a lot of candidates. Then you dock all the candidate protein onto your receptor, and then you calculate the complementarity score. The reason we start from carbon alpha and the carbon beta vector is that sometimes you need to rotate for the interaction, sometimes you need to rotate the side chain a little bit. But sometimes for the key interaction site, like this kind of, like this glutamic acid, it might be that these oxygen atoms, it's very important to form a hydrogen bond with the receptor. Then you would like to start from this very key oxygen atoms, and then you go back, you grow back the side chains. So depend on if you would like to have more flexibility of side chain, then you start from carbon alpha, carbon beta. And if you have very key interaction atoms, then you can start back.
And why you might need to have greater flexibility? You want to make something like catalyst?
Right.
Have special structure. Why you don't want to have special structure, but just some cloud of structure?
The reason is that we start from reaching the main chain conformation. Actually, in real protein, if you use another skeleton, when they form complex, they are not exactly the same position, right?
No.
Yeah. If not absolutely the same position, so you need to allow the side chain to rotate a little bit.
I know this example of stripes in and subtilite,
mm-hmm.
where the ends of side chain
right.
have the same position.
Right.
But the origins, C alpha, have different positions.
That's why
we have to put attention at the ends, not at
right.
the root.
Right, that's why we have a different approach. This one is that we pay attention to the ends, but not the carbon alpha, carbon beta vector.
Yeah.
For carbon alpha, if you start from carbon alpha, carbon beta vector, it's more simple, much simpler. But if you start from the ends, then...
This I understand, but...
Right. Actually, we tried both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we tried both. And I will not go into details for the algorithm we use. I'll just show you some examples. One of the examples that we are working on is the CD4 binding site. The CD4 binding site with the GP120. This project is collaborated with Dr. Witter in France. This picture shows the complex structure between CD4 and the GP120. This structure was solved by Wynn Hendricks' group in Colombia. You can see that the CD4 structure of CD4 it's very like immunoglobulin protein. So it's one domain is a 2-bit sheet.
So what's the 1 to do with the CD4 GP120?
Well, start from CD4 GP120. We would like to transfer the binding site of CD4 onto a smaller protein. Right. So this slide shows the results. I mean, some of the results. You get a lot of hints. Then you need to score them, and you need to select them out. But you can from this slide, you show not only bit. CD4 is a bit structure. Not only bit structure, we can also select out like all helical proteins and also small proteins like this. It's a very small protein, disulfide-rich, non-secondary structures, alpha helix, and also bit structures. So they are very different from CD4. But from this calculation, after we remove all the key interaction sites, we hope that all this protein will bind to the GP120.
It binds?
This is a calculation.
Oh.
I mean, we need to do experiment. this is one example of the calculation, one small protein. This is very small. I don't remember, like less than 30 amino radius. And the three key radius superpose very well with CD4 key radius. And
what do you suggest? What's the difference between the grafted site and the suggestion?
Oh, grafted site means the key radius. We already know, I mean, from mutations or from a crystal structure, you know where is the key interaction sites. But you know, this small protein was not designed for binding GP120, right? After you graft the three residues, and some other residues on the surface may not be well complementary to the surface of GP120. You need to do some mutations. I will continue on to that. That's why not only the three key residues you need to redesign. Actually, you need to redesign the whole interaction, the binding surface. This is the example of the Dr. Witter's group experimentally working on. They already synthesized the small peptide from Scorpia. And after some mutation on the original Scorpia peptide, they get some active mutants. It's one of the mutants. It's comparable to the native CD4. And we are collaborating with another skeleton. This one, they already started with this sculpting skeleton. And we are collaborating with another skeleton. The experiment is still going on. Yeah, I guess for this grafting studies, not only consider the active site, also we need to redesign the interface. That's why. So if we need to redesign the interface, then we need to do side chain packing. So I'll continue on how we repack the interface. We used generic algorithm combined with disturbing mutations for rebuild the protein side chains. Actually, we started this program for specifically for protein-protein interaction, but also, of course, you can use the program for packing the side chains within one protein. I think I will not go into details of this the current status of all the side chain packing methods. Yeah, I think I need to explain a little bit on Rotemer libraries. For side chain packing, I think the most popular, I mean, most people use Rotemer libraries. I think the most frequently used ones is the backbone dependent side chain Rotemer library. But if you use Rotemer library, it's only statistical distribution. In crystal structure, especially in active site and also in binding site, if side chains form hydrogen bond or like have salt bridges with another residue, usually this residue will not in the Rotemer library. They will deviate because they already get favorable energy to not stay in the stable rotamers. It's quite common in protein structures. As our purpose, we would like to repack the protein-protein interface. So if we only use the Rotemer library, it's not sufficient for our purpose. That's why we start from Rotemer libraries, but we need to move around. So, this I will not explain. We use genetic algorithm and Rotemer libraries, but on the basis of Rotemer libraries, we will allow the dihedral angles, the K angles, we allow them to vary. Like the minimum is 60 degree, you can move every step by 15 degree, and you can coverage the whole conformational range like 60 degrees plus and minus. And also, if you would like to do a more fine search, we can also vary the searching step, and you can also like if you would like a larger conformational coverage, then you can make the process to cover a larger conformational space, but it takes longer. So that I will not go into this. What kind of, we use AMBOL potential function to calculate the energy scores, and this table shows. This table shows that our algorithm can give reasonable results for protein side chain packing, and also I think this table shows the protein side chain packing within protein, and we try to compare different algorithms. I would like to show this table. We compare our algorithm with this one. You will compare our algorithm with the published algorithm of this one SCWRL, and for our purpose our algorithm is a little bit better for protein complexes, for the interface repacking. But overall, it's very comparable. Then we use this algorithm try to repack the protein-protein interface. This is one example of Barnes and Basta. If we can calculate like separately, like the first time we only vary this small sequence in Barnes, and also next time you vary this small sequence in Basta, the lowest energy sequence we get, this SS, is very similar to the native structure, is native sequence. Like this one is arginine, but the arginine one is the lysine. They are very similar. But if you calculate repacking the protein-protein interface at the same time, you'll get some very interesting results. For this sequence, probably I go. This is easier. This is the search sequence, and this is the native sequence. You can see that at some position, they just switched. If you calculate only one protein, then you get a very similar sequence. But if you calculate them simultaneously, they will switch. Like this one is originally it's arginine, now it's aspartic acid, and originally this is glutamic acid, now it's arginine. So the pair is here. Like originally in the native structure, the blue, the green one, they can form salt bridges or hydrogen bond, very strong, one positive and one negative. And in the sequences you design, they just switch. This one become arginine and this one become glutamic acid. Well, I think this result is quite reasonable because you know, of course, for one protein interaction surface, you can get other possibilities of sequences, and if in this case, if you switch, of course, the energy should be almost the same. So, the next question we ask. After we get the side chain packing program, we would like to ask. I think yesterday David Baker already told us some results about this. Given a protein fold, how many side chain packings? How many side chain packing possibilities can be found? And are all the corresponding sequences similar? I only show you some preliminary data here. We start from different folds. Four types of protein structures, alpha protein and also beta structures, alpha plus beta and alpha slash beta. I think the results are similar to David Baker's results because most of the low energy sequences have very high homology with the native sequence. But there are some, if you compare these four fingers, these three are very similar. I mean, you get lower the energy, this is the native sequence. We also, the red dot, we also compare different crystal structures of the same fold. And if you try compare different crystal structures with different, with like 50 or 40% sequence homology, you have an energy gap and they're not the same energy, but they're quite close. If you compare alpha slash beta protein, it looks different from other class of structures.
Which sequences do structures need simulation with? From random sequences or from native sequences?
Random sequence. Just given a fold, you have coordinates, backbone coordinates, and then you pack side chains.
I know, but you also station sequence space, right?
Right, because we try to packing all the side chain packing possibility. So we are searching the side chain. It's a random sequence.
So this is for fixed backbone and backbone?
Fixed backbone. Yeah, we just keep the backbone rigid and try to find out what side chain packets will be okay with this backbone.
I have a question. This seems a little bit inconsistent with the protein-protein interaction work.
Mm-hmm.
In that when you thought with the protein-protein interaction work that you have this structure and you found that as long as you lost motion to both sides or change
right.
to both sides, there was a lot of switching around that went hard. Here I have just an intermolecular version of the same thing,
mm-hmm.
and yet things stay relatively close to where they started. What's the difference? That you stray far in the intermolecular case, but you don't stray far in the intramolecular case?
No, for intermolecular, I mean for protein-protein interaction, because you have a small surface, and also we already keep the key radius intact, and you keep three or four radius intact, you only have like 20, you calculate only 20 or 30, and the sequences I show is only the lowest energy. Yeah, of course, you have a list of possible sequences. It's also quite close. It's also quite homologous for the native sequence, the lowest energy ones. This finger also shows, I think, the same results because the lowest energy ones also quite similar. You have high sequence identity with the native sequence.
I think one problem is the fact that there's a lot of sequence information included in the backbone structure. So when you think of that backbone structure, the reverse engineer, the side chain, there's explicitly a lot of sequence information.
No, the Rotemer library we use is not backbone dependent.
Uh-huh. But still the fact that, for instance, I mean, in the extreme case, you have a probing.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's why you can calculate like this way. Otherwise, if you have infinite space, it's impossible to search all the side chain space. So of course, the backbone conformation already make a much smaller space for side chain packing search. But we would like to study whether you have, I mean, it's very easy to know that the low energy structure with the very high sequence identity, but we would like to study whether in nature different I mean, different sequence with low homology can converge to a same protein fold. No. Well, like for Tim Barrow, you can have as low as 10%, but they will have same protein structure. So that's, I mean, people are talking about convergent evolution. So if you have, I mean, you simulate enough sequences, I think we can find very obvious. I don't know, maybe we can find that kind of results. I mean, different.
The optimal solution for you in sequence space is 100% homology with the native sequence. That sounds a little strange.
I think maybe we are a little bit different because we use the same amino acid composition.
Still, why don't you have replacements on the surface, for example? Why wouldn't it be kind of flexible on the surface,
even like if you calculate side chain packing, the side chain orientation for one single protein, even for the surface relatives, you get like 60 to 70% right. For buried relatives, you get like 80% right. But for the outside, it's also you can get as high as 60%.
Well,
it's not exactly right. Like you have some examples like this dot. This the energy is lower than this one.
Right, but.
But they are close, right?
They are close. And yeah. For example, when the lowest, for example, for beta protein, the lowest is 100% homologous to the native state.
Mm-hmm.
Given the huge size of the sequence state, I'm very perplexed that you can work exactly to the same sequence as native state. Given that the energy function is not exactly right on this end of that,
the voltage 100% means it is exactly the native sequence, right?
What?
It's exactly the native sequence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, sometimes.
But do you put that by hand? You just say, okay, I have to take a sequence in my figure, right? That's the reference point.
No, you have energy.
Yeah, but just by random search, where you will find maybe.
Oh, no. We put this dot by hand, but we calculate the energy.
So it's just different.
Right.
Ones are generated by you, the open circles are generated, or which sequences did you generate? I'm probably completely confused.
No, like for example, like the red dot is a crystal structure. For alpha slash beta, we may choose like three crystal structures. And we calculate the energy of that crystal structure and put a dot here.
Right, but which sequences do you generate in your sequence? The ones that are shown by open circles, right?
No. Yes, the open circles is all generated sequences.
Okay, fine. Then that means that you find it's not 100% homologous, but 96% homologous.
Yeah, but
yeah.
The
it's possible.
How do you generate them? What do you start from the
If we start from one backbone structure, we already know the protein backbone structure, and then we try to pack the side chains.
But you start from random sequences.
Right.
You start from random
But we use the same amino acid composition with the native one.
But you would
the composition will cap. No.
Or you start from modification of the.
No, we start from random sequence, but the composition, amino acid residue composition, was kept. I don't know whether it's because of this or.
How large are the proteins?
Most of them, I just checked, like 100 radius or 200. The largest one is around 200. Well, of course, I think we need more calculation to draw a conclusion. But still, we are interested to have this kind of comparison.
Because you know, in reality, many sites can mutate you, and you make sequence alignment, but you have a lot of mutations everywhere. If you compare same protein from different proteins.
Right, you have a lot of mutation, but it's still like 40 or 50% homologous. Okay, I think I need to finish. Right, I almost finished. I'll just stop. Yeah, I think I just stop. So
are the sequences optimized or they're just random, just many random sequences?
It's a random sequence with the same composition.
But you didn't try to optimize.
We optimized by sidechain packing.
By
sidechain packing.
Sidechain packing in 3D, but not in sequence.
Nothing in sequence.
Eugene, this is the answer to your question. They took random sequences. They did not try to optimize sequences at all.
Optimize sequence by sidechain packing.
You optimize structure by sidechain packing, not sequence.
Right, sidechain structure.
But then I complete it. Then what is the homology between random sequence and naked sequence? Zero.
Looks like random sequence will give you percent of homology.
What?
Looks like random sequence with a given percent of homology. You just randomly replace.
Random sequence with 96% of homology.
You randomly replace per percent of residues. No. You randomly replace for 4% of residues, correct?
Okay.
I think so.
Okay. So they take native sequence of almost native 96, and then they repeat it, right?
Yes. It did not try to optimize.
So they did not design
sequences.
Okay. But the results is design sequence.
But it's actually you design your results applied to some of the other idea, the idea that you could randomly replace half the amino acid in the alpha slash beta protein.
Right. That's what I'm interested in, alpha slash beta protein.
A structure that's lower in energy.
I think that was the
problem. Packing
is very good.
Okay.